This is a recording, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig
like,
it.
Stop right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
Well, it's coming, right?
Yeah, it's not too bad yet, but I hear it's only going to get worse.
What is it supposed to start right around the middle of this afternoon, right?
Well, now.
Yeah, I think it's just supposed to ramp up. I think it's supposed to be the worst around, like, this afternoon, late this afternoon.
Yeah, well, we're kind of fortunate. We'll be able to get out of here before it really comes.
It's pretty sloppy.
Yeah. Well, that's the guy on the other end calling things sloppy.
Well, I was talking about the weather. I was talking about the weather. I wasn't talking about the Bucks.
Right. Yeah. Hey, good morning to you, Sandy. For those of you who may not know, Sandy is my co-host on Tuesdays and on Fridays. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, and today is Tuesday. I know that because I'm
say?
Here.
No, oh,
no, yeah. I'm just saying I figured out how to calculate my week based on Tuesdays and Fridays.
You know, I've had my vaccinations. And
I'll tell Aaron Rodgers.
I think that I'm, you know, getting a little touch of something.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's not, you know, anything that I'm feeling sick or anything. Just slight runny nose.
Uh-huh.
And don't be frightened.
No, I'm just going to move out of this room here. And
maybe I shouldn't have said that. Yeah. But I mean, having those vaccinations and whatever, you know, those things kind of make things a little easier on you.
Mm-hmm.
Or so I've heard.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
All right. So Sandy, we've got a lot to talk about as always. I really, as was pouring over a lot of different information today, as you and I wanting to do, and we saw, you know, basically the same thing that, you know, has been going on. Things don't change drastically in the news. I mean, there's always something, you know, where something blows up or those kinds of things. But I think, you know, I wanted to delve deep into the crevices of Sandy Williams' mind as it relates to where our nation is and where we're headed, and take some time to try to figure out if we can get out of this. And there's so many different layers that have brought us to where we are on January 9th, 2024, as you and I have lived through all these different decades and seen America and the evolution of her, and then what we've read about America prior to us even knowing about, you know, the past, about, you know, the development of our nation. And our nation is at a crossroads. There's no question that the American nation is at a crossroads, and we've got to figure out a way to fix it. Before we go there, you and I talk about the term community. And so these are the definitions of communities. Unified body of individuals, such as the people with common interests living in a particular area, broadly the area itself. A group of people with a common characteristic or interest living together with a large society. A body of persons of common and especially professional interest scattered through a larger society. A body of persons or nations having a common history or common social, economic, and political interests, a group linked by common policy, an interacting population of various kinds of individuals, such as species in a common location, a state of commonwealth, a social state or condition, joint ownership or participation, likeness, fellowship, society at large. Sandy, those are great definitions of what a community is. I remember Dr. King always saying, we've built a great community, America. We built a great community, but we're lacking brotherhood. Let's talk a little bit about that community. You're a globe traveler, and what you see and what you've seen in other nations as it relates to community, and then where we are.
Well, you know, community, I think it can be reflected by the social structure that's been created by peoples to govern themselves, all right? So you go in Western Europe, or most of the developed nations have a sense of community that has caused them to have healthcare for all, to have education for all provided by the state in some manner that makes it inexpensive and accessible. Same with healthcare, inexpensive and accessible. And to look after young people with child daycare. All of these things reflect a communal sense of the community that they want to invest their energy, time, and money in making sure that everybody within the community, born into that community, has essentially equal opportunities to participate in the community successfully. That's a true community view of one another and of things. Our country was born out of something different. We have been a melting pot from the beginning. We have drawn from many communities around the world and have brought these individual communities to our country and expected them to blend together as a community, or at least that could have been an expectation. I've mentioned on the show a number of times this fellow Alexis de Tocqueville, the French philosopher who came to the United States in the late 1820s and traveled all around, and then wrote a book that was published in the early 1830s that reflected on his views of America. And one of the things he pointed out was the fact that America seemed to be built on rugged individualism, but lacked a sense of community. And he saw the benefits of rugged individualism. He also saw the potential problems associated with a lack of true community. And as time has evolved, Alexis de Tocqueville looks very prescient. He looks like he did a very good job of understanding and predicting, because there's another book written by a guy named Milton Handler, who wrote it in the late 1950s, called The Uprooted. And he was a social historian who looked at the evolution of America through the waves of immigrants. And he pointed out how every wave of immigrant came in and was lower on the totem pole than the waves of immigrants that had come in before them. And however, almost all of the waves of immigrants that came into this country through the 1930s were basically European immigrants coming from the different European communities, German, Polish, Italian, Irish, the waves of immigrants. They all came in. They all were pretty much alike. And some were blue-eyed and blonde, and some were dark-eyed and dark-haired, but they were all Europeans.
Right.
Okay? And the only difference at that point were the number of Chinese immigrants, the so-called Yellow Horde, who'd come in to work on the railroad, and they were treated differently. And there was one other group, the slaves,
right,
the blacks. Okay? And as Handler pointed out, on this totem pole, there were the most recent wave of immigrants at the bottom. No, they weren't quite at the bottom. The bottom was always the blacks, okay, the past slaves.
Who didn't come here on their own volition.
Didn't come here.
The only ones who didn't.
Didn't, right. And,
right.
Didn't come and weren't allowed to maintain their culture or their own sense of community. That was actually against the law.
Right.
After they came to this country. But after World War II, and actually ever since 1970, about since the Vietnamese conflict, the wave of immigrants into this country have looked different, okay? They haven't been from Europe primarily. They've been from Latin countries, and they've been from Asian countries, whether it be Middle Eastern Asian countries or our Southeast Asian countries. So they've come to look different. And the ability to assimilate those people into the community has become more difficult. When we had this European disjointed community of individualists, there was a sense of community. For instance, Milwaukee had the sewer socialists, we were called, and those were the government leaders, primarily German in heritage, who built parks, who built up a public school system that was quite vaunted and well regarded around the country. We invented civil service, and we had the sort of the best professional government. We had no corruption. We were looking after the community values, and that's all changed.
You know, Sandy, we are going to cover quite a bit of information as we talk about this, because there's something that's just not working in this nation, and I've said on more than one occasion that America is an experiment. She's been an experiment from the onset. You traveled the world. There's no other nation on earth quite like America. And we've grown accustomed to what America is, and we've never thought, many of us, that America could ever have reached its zenith, because we're, what, the great America. But if we don't take a long, hard look, Sandy, at where we are, this nation that we all love so dearly is in jeopardy.
Well, the experiments are always by nature fragile, and we have never stopped being an experiment, because we continue to push the envelope in terms of the makeup of our country, for instance. And we had Governor Redvest, whose stump speech was all about the manifest destiny of America, the fact that not only were we a manifest destiny to sort of populate all of the American continent, but we were manifestly the globe. We were the melting pot of the globe.
You know, my mind is, and I know who Governor Redvest was.
Dreyfus.
Lee Dreyfus. 844-967-2789. A very interesting and needed conversation that you won't get anywhere else. We're going to be undertaking that this morning with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. 844-967-2789. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we are going to, you know, take a walk down memory lane in the history of our nation and where we are today and why we are in such a precarious state. And you know, it's important that we hear from you, the listening audience, 844-967-2789. Because guess what? This is not a conversation about Sandy and I for Sandy and I. Sandy and I are genuinely concerned about the future of our nation. And Sandy's got grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
No, I don't have great-grandchildren.
Oh, well, he's got
grandchildren.
He's got grandchildren. And we have to be concerned, whether we have grandchildren or not, about the future of this nation, and it's certainly in peril right now. So, Sandy, before we went to break, you were explaining, because we were talking about the fact that there's a lack of community in what's happening in our country.
Well, yeah, America is always built on rugged individualism, and rugged individualism clearly is an important kind of a characteristic, particularly at the frontier. Okay, when you are living in a rural environment, it's individualism that makes it right. It's the ability to sustain hard work. It's the ability to be adventuresome. And
all those old cowboy movies that I love.
Well, no,
so
but
much.
I mean, it's also just farming at homesteading.
Right.
All of what built America and the frontier as Manifest Destiny pushed America to the West, and we inhabited all of this vast continent. That was a lot of it driven by rugged individualism. But what we don't recognize so clearly, I think, is what happens with the urbanization. Okay, because at the frontier, rugged individualism can create subsistence at least, right? You can make it yourself.
Right.
You can grow it yourself. You can do the things necessary to sustain yourself. When you are in an urban environment, the only thing that can sustain you, the only currency of the urban environment, is money itself. It takes money because you can't grow things in your yard to sustain yourself. You can't make it yourself. You can't build your own house.
You can't raise the animals that you need.
Right. You can't build a log cabin, right? You need to buy a house. You need money. And so this has happened all across the world. The urbanization of the world has created a cultural difference between those who are urbanized and those who are not. And so in America, we do have a divide between rural and urban. But the fact is that the vast numbers of Americans live in the urban setting, okay? And it's the urban setting in which most immigrants end up living, okay? And it's the urban environment in which subsistence becomes most difficult for those who are at the lowest end of the income scale. And so the sense of community that's required, particularly in the urban setting, is great, because it's important that all of those living in the urban setting have a sense of one another and a sense of making sure that the urban setting is as conducive as possible to bringing everyone into the community and giving them the opportunity. And so the sewer socialists of Milwaukee saw this early on, and we built parks. We did all these things in Milwaukee that created the roots and the bones of Milwaukee, which are so great. But we seem now to have lost that, both locally in a city like Milwaukee, but also nationally. We have a great divide between those who live urban and those who live in an rural setting. And we also seem to have gotten a greater divide between one another as we look more and more different from one another.
So that lack of understanding between rural and urban is one of those things that is adding to the fact that our lack of community, because we don't see one another as countrymen. We don't see one another as Americans. We see one another as those people down there and we who are still kind of rugged individuals in rural areas. Tomorrow I've got a woman on who is a organic farmer, and she's doing some great things in rural Wisconsin. But the people in rural Wisconsin don't know anything about the people in urban. And the people in urban Wisconsin don't know anything about the rural. But the truth of the matter is we're all interdependent on one another when it comes to government, Sandy.
Absolutely. But, I mean, you know, the sense of community around the world, most nations are built around not just a language that's similar, but also an ethnicity that makes them more or less homogeneous. And so the difference in America is we have a language that makes us similar, but our ethnicity is increasingly varied from one another. And I would say that if you were to characterize countries, there are countries in which the people hate the government, and love one another. They hate the institution of the country in which they live, but they love one another and their countrymen. And what draws them together, what sustained, I'm sure, Russia during the war and in World War II was their love of one another, not their love of Joseph Stalin and their government. In the United States, we tend to wrap ourselves in the American flag, but we don't like one another, okay? And we've always had that characteristic of internecine competition amongst one another and internecine hostility amongst one another. And until we derive a real sense of empathetic community, and we are going to have a problem in America. And the real problem we have right now is that the MAGA movement, I believe, is built not on an empathetic sense of community, but just the opposite.
So Sandy, what we see in America is our ethnicity more so than we do our fellow countrymen. The ethnicity separates us first, and so we don't see one another as Americans on equal footing because we're Americans.
Yeah, I mean, increasingly, being an American is a litmus test that involves a number of issues. Okay, so you know, if you are a liberal, you might consider the far right to be un-American because you think they're attacking what is important to America. And if you're a conservative, you seem to believe that liberals are not American because they're attacking what you believe is fundamental to America. And so we've lost this sense of imputing to one another at least the notion that they're operating out of goodwill and with good intentions. Okay, we've removed the sense of goodwill and imputing goodwill and good intentions to those who are different than us.
All right, 844-967-2789. A fascinating conversation that Sandy Williams and my co-host and I are having. We can have it without you, but we'd much rather have it with you. John, hang on.
There she was, just walking down the street singing. She looked fine, and I nearly lost my mind. Before I knew it, she was walking next to me singing.
Do a diddy-diddy-dum, diddy-do.
Holding my head.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we're having a conversation, you know, about community and what is happening in our nation. And let's go to John from Boaz. Good morning to you, John. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I am running for the dog catcher of my small village. And can I say that on the air? But
yeah,
anyways,
go ahead.
I'm a chicken farmer, and the cost of feed is goes up and down, of course. But we have good water here because the chickens, they won't drink frozen water. And the egg is about 80% water anyways. My chickens get fed good corn mash, and they're kind of slowing down for the winter, but the cats, my cats, are going to outnumber the chickens pretty soon. So that's what we got going on.
So what's your point?
Well, I like the country. My point is I like the rural lifestyle because I came from the German Jews, and we were persecuted in Europe, and then now we were persecuted in our own American country.
But you didn't come from German Jews. Your ancestors did. Okay? So you've been in America. And this is kind of part of Sandy.
Well, I think John's making a point, which is that he lives in rural America because of his ability to be self-sustaining, independent from both the pressures and the dangers of being reliant on others, particularly if you come from a vulnerable population group, okay? And I think you're making my point, John, that in an urban setting, people are more vulnerable to one another and to the dangers of, for instance, bigotry, which might keep them from being able to realize their potential. And I think that's what you're describing, is that the German Jews fled Germany, and you find comfort in being in a rural setting where you can be self-sustaining and immune, more immune from that kind of a risk and danger. And what we have in our urban settings are some very vulnerable populations as the result of what you describe.
John? Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, so I just want to push back a little on that because, so I understand that he's from a different background, but all of these different ethnicities are from different backgrounds in this nation. And so let me go here to the definition of what an American is.
You're quoting what the historian, right?
Yeah, historian.
Yeah. Philip Gleason, is that his name?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so to be or to become an American, a person did not have to be any particular national, linguistic, religious, or ethnic background. All he had to do was to commit himself to the political ideology centered on the abstract ideas of liberty, equity, and republicanism. You're going to have to explain that word after I'm done with this. Thus, the universalist ideological character of American nationality meant that it was open to anyone who willed to become an American. So, that definition includes anybody who comes here.
Well, yes, and I think that definition is an idealistic one, okay?
Right.
That's the ideal of American, and the word Republican, there, Republican, is a small r Republican, and it's meant to be meaning that you embrace the form of government which we have in America, which this historian is stylizing as a Republican form of government. That's an ideal, okay? And the question is, are we achieving that ideal? Do we embrace one another all as Americans? And I think at various times we have. I think during World War II, we embraced one another all as Americans because we all felt that our backs were against the wall. But increasingly over the last 40 years, I think the influx of many people who are not European by nature, the influx of many people who might not be Christian but might embrace other religions, has stressed this question of whether we embrace one another as Americans. And furthermore, I think we have begun to create tests for one another as to whether we are true Americans or not. And those tests are ideological. So, you know, as I said before, I think we have conservatives attacking liberals as being un-American. I think we have liberals attacking conservatives as being un-American who are stressing our democracy. That's the assertion of the liberals about conservatives. The conservatives are asserting that liberals are trying to create a government here which is not the form of government which they prefer. They don't want government, okay? So, they don't want government intrusion, and liberals do, so that's un-American.
So the goal should be to live up to those ideals, not to dismiss them.
Well, I think those ideals are fundamentally important to having a nation, okay? A nation that doesn't have cracks and fissures in it that cause it not to work. And I think that what's worrisome now is we have these political movements, these trends ongoing, which are not enhancing the sense of Americanism of all of us, but are beginning to use the sense of being an American as a divide divide between us, and we have decided that those who oppose us, who don't agree with us, are not American; they're un-American. Okay, and that's an exceedingly dangerous trend, a social trend, because it keeps us from recognizing one another, from respecting one another. It keeps us from accomplishing the things that might be necessary to accomplish as a country. It creates an end justifies the means kind of an approach to things. I would say quite frankly that it's the sense of the other side not being American, which has allowed a lot of people to decide that the 2020 election was rigged. There's no evidence that there was anything fraudulent done. The evidence is that maybe many, many people voted. And from the standpoint of those who don't like the outcome, they would say too many people voted.
Right. Okay? Too many of the wrong people.
Too many of the wrong people. Too many of the people who are viewed as not American,
yes,
voted. Okay. So you end up with these sort of undercurrents that are really all about testing the Americanism of one another.
And so people may not understand this is where the inherent danger of the future of our nation is perched, because these things may not sound like much, but they are going to be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back as far as the development of our nation as it continues to evolve.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, America is its form of government. And if that form of government becomes suddenly much different, less tolerant of one another, less tolerant of differences, less tolerant of free speech, less tolerant, do we still have America? You know, it can call itself America, but do we still have it? And, you know, I wouldn't point my finger just at conservatives who are declaring liberals to be un-American, but I think liberals are declaring conservatives who are striving to change the form of government as being un-American. And I think everybody's operating with their own form of good intention here. But I think what we have to do is start shaping our intentions based on a true view of community and a true view of what it is to be an American, and a true sense of what America needs to be and should be. And that's where we're beginning to have fault lines.
844-967-2789. You can join the conversation. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. I hope I get a little bit of time here. But, you know, if you want a unified country, first off, with what's going on as far as illegal immigration, you're not going to have a unified country. And the word liberal doesn't work anymore. Progressive is the new term. And
CJ,
you know,
CJ,
when you've got the president, when
CJ, I'm just trying to, you know, go ahead, man.
You've got the president saying to half of America who voted MEGA Republicans, what does MEGA stand for, Sandy or Earl?
Well, make America great again. It's an acronym. That's what it stands for.
You know,
that's what it stands for.
Demonized now, where the president Biden stands up and demonizes half of America.
Let me do this quickly. So have you not been listening to what Donald Trump has been saying about the other half of America? CJ, is that okay?
What's he saying, Earl?
Oh, okay. Sandy, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I do think we have Donald Trump calling them Marxists, and there's a whole bunch of kind of categorization of them, and I think there is definitely a sense that those people are less American, right? They don't have American values. But I, in this discussion, CJ, was not singling out the right. I was saying that both the right and the left have come to point the finger at the other side and to declare them un-American. Okay, and that's a danger, and it's a danger from both sides. And so I think we're in agreement with respect to that. But I think what we need to be is honest with one another about the extent to which our side or their side is doing this, because it's become a political strategy.
Well, when you got one side that's saying that the border's secure and that everything's going
well, wait a minute. Wait, CJ, stop. Just a minute. We're talking, now you want to get into a specific issue. First of all, I'm not sure that one side is saying the border is secure. My understanding is that we've got both sides agreeing that there's a big border problem, and now we've got a dispute as to how you solve the border problem. But we're trying to talk beyond that at just the social situation in America. And do you feel alienated? You sound alienated every time you call in. You do feel quite alienated from the situation, don't you?
When I'm watching what's going on and you got the president's party.
Okay, so the answer is yes, you do feel very alienated, and you're alienated about the other side. And I think that you don't feel like the other side should be in control of America. You think that it's a serious problem for America. And so that's what we're describing, is we're trying to describe the angst that's existing in America from both perspectives because of our inability to respect the other side and to have a sense of community in terms of solving the community problems.
Andy, and I never get to answer. You ask a question, and I never get to answer.
No. I didn't ask you a question. I simply made a statement. I made a statement. But I think that, what is it you want to say?
You think, Sandy, can I answer a question?
No, he did.
CJ, are you talking over me?
CJ, thank you very much for the call. it's futile. And, that's part of the problem that we're talking about. The other side and Joe Biden is doing this and the Democrats are doing that. And that's part of what is the destruction of our nation. We got to get beyond that foolishness.
Well, I think we need to get beyond stridency into discussion.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Look, so it's Tuesday. That means Tuesday with my co-host Sandy. Sandy and I are having a discussion that is clearly not about Democrat or Republicans. It's not about Joe Biden. It's not about Donald Trump. It's about the fact that Americans don't seem to be able to see one another as equals. And so because of that, we have a cataclysmic divide that has to be somehow worked out. Because as we were stating earlier, America is an experiment. There is no other nation on the planet that equals America with all the different ethnicities, Sandy, from around the world. They're here. And so we are all supposed to be able to work beyond our ethnicities and put that behind us and become this thing called an American. An American is not determined by your ethnicity, your religious persuasion, your political persuasion. But we've somehow put those things first. At the detriment, Sandy, of our nation being able to move forward.
Well, tribalism is obviously something that's embedded in our DNA. And it's something we have to overcome societally to accomplish what it is that society can accomplish by blending together all the different familial tribes, okay? America can't work in an environment of tribalism. America is basically the anti-tribal kind of a culture because we are made up of an infinite number of tribes, ethnicities from all around the world.
Right.
And so what we have to resist is this tendency to return to tribalism, which is built into us. So it isn't easy because we, instinctually there is a desire amongst people to be amongst those
and
who are like them in the from a DNA standpoint.
Right.
Okay, that's something that's sort of fundamental, and so we need to get beyond that through societal norms. And so what in America we have to be worried about is a return to tribalism. And I fear that there are definite features of that in being introduced into our society. And you know, some of that relates to the alarm, the nature of the alarm about the border, okay? The border is an important problem, and it's an important problem simply because we need to figure out how many people we can let into the country each year and how best to assimilate them and how we choose amongst them. But the question then needs to be directly addressed, whether the criteria we use for deciding who it is that can come into our country are going to be based on tribal notions or are they going to be based on something else, okay? And that's where we need to be direct in our analysis of ourselves. And so I think that fundamentally, when we get all the way down to fundamental problems, some of them are tribal in nature in our country right now, and we have to worry about that. And some of them, this rural versus urban thing, combined tribalism, the people who live in the city might look somewhat different or a great deal different than the people who live in the rural sector. But also they face a whole different set of problems, like I described before. People who live in an urban setting are very vulnerable, okay? They're very vulnerable to the business cycle. They're very vulnerable to their capacity to sustain themselves and to have subsistence, more so than the people who live in the rural environment. We need to develop a better cross-sectional understanding of that.
So Sandy... And the reason that we're having the conversation is because our nation is, I believe, at a crossroads in its development. And so we've seen kind of the growth historically of our nation. And now we kind of see some things that are taking place, some things that are transpiring, Sandy, that should give us all pause to say, can the nation continue to move forward in this environment, right? I mean, that we have a responsibility, Sandy, to have the conversation, man. The nation is worth saving, but the nation is in peril. And people may not believe that, but that's up to them. They don't have to. But anybody whose eyes are open can see that our nation is in peril. Let's go to Paul. Good morning to you, Paul. You say what?
Good morning. How are you?
All right.
Enjoying the weather?
Yes, sir. Paul, go ahead.
I'm enjoying the weather. Anyways, I just wanted to comment on the current environment that we're in. I agree with you guys 100%. I think if you've been on Facebook lately, I mean, go on there. I mean, when I see divide, I mean, it's just this person's bad, this person's bad. Even on your own radio show, not yours, but the guy on that's at 2 o'clock. He insists that, you know, all Republicans are evil, and if you're not with us, you're a piece of crap. You know, and this is where the problem lies. I mean, that's, I'm a middle of the road guy. I don't worship Trump. I definitely don't like Joe Biden, but I'm not like wild, crazy, right? Kind of like CJ. He regurgitates the same crap that you hear all the time. So, yeah, I tend to stay away from that one.
Well, I think that centrism, in some respects, is maybe a trend that's going to develop, not because people don't want to accomplish things, but because they're concerned about what it is that's happening out at the extremes in terms of the views of one another. And I think that civility, the most important thing we can reintroduce into our society is civility and mutual respect. I think that's what you're saying.
Hey, Paul, man, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into The Earl Ingram Show.